So did you hear the story about the little girl, full of hope, little four-year-old girl named Sally, who went to the mall and crawled up on Santa's lap and looked into his eyes, and he said to her, "Little girl, what is it you want for Christmas?" And all of a sudden, her face sort of fell, and she looked upset, and he thought she didn't understand, so he repeated patiently the question, "Little girl, you need to tell me, what is it you want for Christmas?" "Santa," she said, "I can't believe it. I absolutely sent you 2 emails. I tweeted my list, I posted it on Instagram and Facebook, and I sent you a video on Instant Messenger. What happened?" So let's just hope that on December 23rd, when Santa comes to First Unity, he and Mrs. Claus will be a little better prepared, right? I'm sure they will be. I'm sure they will be. So as Mary already said this morning, today is the first day of Advent, the joyous and sacred season. So ready or not, the Christmas season is upon us. And if you are ready and all your gifts are wrapped and all your cookies are baked and your trees are up, I don't want to hear about it, okay? Tell somebody else. The word Advent is from the Latin adventus, which means to come or coming, traditionally referring to the long-awaited coming of the prophesied Messiah. Today, 2,000 years later, Advent is still a time for preparation. As we joyously prepare to celebrate the birth of Jesus, we also prepare to celebrate our own spiritual rebirth of awareness of the Christ Spirit within. Christian churches all over the world designate the 4 Sundays of Advent with special themes. And Mary's already told you today's theme is faith, addressed beautifully in today's daily word, and also symbolized by the lighting of the first Unity candle. And isn't it wonderful that a Mary lit the candle, right? That worked out. And a Mary joined the church today. There you go. We're good. So as we gaze at that flickering flame this morning, we realize that the story of Christmas is above all a story of faith. Through this Christmas season, we're going to take a journey back in time to revisit the beloved nativity story, as we do every year. But wait, which one? Because many of you know there are 2 in the Bible, 1 in Matthew and 1 in Luke. Mark and John say absolutely nothing about the birth or the entire childhood of Jesus. And to understand why such differences exist in the Gospels, it's important to remember that none of the events in the 4 biblical biographies were recorded as they happened. Can you imagine? No smartphones or camcorders in sight. Can't believe it. And in first century Palestine, less than 10% of the people were literate. And that means that all those people that Jesus taught on the shores of the Sea of Galilee, the peasants could neither read nor write, and so they passed the stories of Jesus' birth down by word of mouth. And if you've ever played the telephone game, you know how that can work. And the first recorded gospel is Mark, and Mark was written about 70 years after Jesus' birth. So no wonder the accounts of the gospels writers often differ, and nowhere are those differences more evident than in our beloved Christmas story. So today we're going to look at Mary's story as told by Luke. Now, we might wonder why Luke chooses to focus on Mary. Perhaps that's the only story he heard, or maybe he had a very special purpose for making Mary his focus. Among all the gospel writers, Luke, a physician, exhibits the highest degree of social consciousness. His gospel is full of just being concerned about all people. In fact, he portrays Jesus ministering to the poor, Samaritans, lepers, tax collectors, women, and children. So Bible scholars suggest that Luke would have been drawn to the story of a young maiden with really no power or status from an insignificant village of Nazareth, chosen to give birth to the Messiah. Now, Bible scholar Marcus Borg believes that by emphasizing Mary's story, Luke is deliberately challenging Roman theology. Not Roman government, but Roman theology, specifically the belief that Caesar Augustus was divine, conceived by a human mother and the god Apollo. Actually, the term Son of God was already in use at the time of Jesus' birth. It was inscribed on coins and statues, but the term referred to the emperor. And around the time of Jesus' birth, Augustus Caesar was decreed the Son of God by the Roman Senate. So maybe Luke's mission is really for Jew and Gentile alike to see Jesus, born to a common young woman, as a true Son of God and a welcome alternative to Roman injustice and violence. We don't know, but what we do know is, regarding Mary, the canonical Gospels tell us very little. But the apocryphal Gospels are full of stories about her. Apocrypha is a Greek word meaning hidden away, the term used for scriptural texts that fall outside the canon. In other words, those books that didn't make the cut into the Bible as we know it. And according to these stories, Mary was born to aged parents, Joachim and Anna. At age 3, she was dedicated to God in the Temple of Jerusalem, and she lived there for 12 years. She is depicted as being so virtuous that angels ministered unto her, and her betrothal to Joseph, which was arranged by her father, as it always was in the day, it was chosen by her father by a miraculous sign that he received. And so Luke's story begins in Nazareth, a tiny village nestled in the lower hills of the Galilee region. Nazareth is a bustling city today. There's a picture of it today. But at the time of the Annunciation, it was an isolated agricultural village of no more than 150 people. And archaeological discoveries reveal, we talked about this during our Sermon on the Mount series, reveal that many of the houses were actually built into the mouths of natural caves. So these pictures Bob and I took when we were in Jerusalem at the Church of the Annunciation in Nazareth, built over the cave that tradition says was the home of Mary and the site of the angelic visit of Gabriel. Here's a close-up of that picture. It's now a church. It's in the bottom floor. But Luke's story then begins in chapter 1, verse 26. And this season, I'm going to read it directly from the Bible. So, in the sixth month, now the sixth month means the sixth month of Elizabeth's pregnancy. Elizabeth was Mary's cousin who was pregnant with John the Baptist. So, in the sixth month, Gabriel was sent by God to a town in Galilee named Nazareth to a virgin engaged to a woman whose name was a man whose name was Joseph of the house of David. The virgin's name was Mary, and he came to her and said, "Greetings, favored one, the Lord is with you." But she was much perplexed by his words and pondered what sort of a greeting that was. The angel said to her, "Do not be afraid, Mary, for you have found favor with God. And now you will conceive and bear a son, and you will name him Jesus. He will be great and will be called the Son of the Most High, and the Lord God will give to him the throne of his ancestor David. He will reign over the house of Jacob forever, and of his kingdom there will be no end." Mary said to the angel, "How can this be, since I am a virgin?" And the angel said to her, "The Holy Spirit will come upon you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you. Therefore, the child to be born will be holy. He will be called Son of God. And now your relative Elizabeth, in her old age, has conceived a son. And this is the sixth month for her who was said to be barren. For nothing will be impossible with God." And then Mary said, "Here I am, the servant of the Lord, let it be with me according to your word. And then the angel departed from her. Now Luke tells us that Mary was betrothed to Joseph. The word would have been, actually the word I read was engaged, but the word in the original would have been betrothed. In all probability, Mary was very young. The word virgin is also translated as a young maiden. And it was the custom for Jewish girls to become betrothed by the age of 12, some as early as age 10. The betrothal, unlike an engagement today, the betrothal was a legal commitment regarded as the first stage of marriage, although the girl would remain with her parents for at least a year or until she was old enough to consummate the union. So today, really, it is virtually impossible for us to grasp what Mary is agreeing to here when she's agreeing to become an unwed mother. By modern standards, it's a common occurrence. However, in early Hebrew society, unmarried pregnant girls were at the very least shunned social outcasts, disowned by their families, and often they were victims of the so-called honor killings, sadly a practice still in place in some areas of the Middle East today. And that could have been Mary's fate, and she would have understood that. It was a remarkable leap of faith for her to say to Gabriel, "Let it be done with me." So Luke's story continues now as Mary, aware of the divine life within her and perhaps in need of some time just for quiet reflection, sets out to the home of her cousin Elizabeth. So we pick the story up in Luke 1, verse 39. Mary set out and went with haste to a Jew. Mary set out and went with haste to a Judean town in the hill country, where she entered the house of Zechariah and greeted Elizabeth. When Elizabeth heard Mary's greeting, the child leapt in her womb, and Elizabeth was filled with the Holy Spirit and exclaimed with a loud cry, "Blessed are you among women, and blessed is the fruit of your womb, and blessed is she who believed that there would be a fulfillment of what was spoken to her by the Lord." So Luke weaves these two what might be called miracle pregnancies together in one story. I think he weaves them together masterfully. Remember, Mary was young and, in her words, had not known a man, and Elizabeth was well past childbearing age. And remember, no in vitro fertilization in the day, okay? So, yet beside all of that, both women conceive, proof that with God, all things are possible. What follows is Mary's song of praise, traditionally called the Magnificat, and it begins in verse 46. We're not going to read it all, so I invite you to read it at home this week, but we'll read part of it. And Mary said, "My soul magnifies the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God. For God has looked with favor on the lowliness of his servant. Surely from now on, all generations will call me blessed. For the Mighty One has done great things for me, and holy is his name. His mercy is for those who fear him from generation to generation." Now, just a note, fear in this instance means having great reverence and awe. So Luke goes on with the story of Elizabeth and John the Baptist, but he picks up Mary again in chapter 2 on the road to Bethlehem. And we read, "In those days, a decree went out from Emperor Augustus that all the world should be registered. This was the first registration and was taken while Quirinius was governor of Syria. All went to their own towns to be registered. Joseph went also from the town of Nazareth in Galilee to Judea, to the city of David called Bethlehem, because he was descended from the house and family of David. He went to be registered with Mary, to whom he was engaged, and who was expecting a child. While they were there, the time came for her to deliver. And she gave birth to her newborn son and wrapped him in bands of cloth and laid him in a manger, because there was no room for them at the inn. And we'll look at the rest of Luke's story, and we'll also visit Matthew's story in the weeks ahead. But for now, let's just take a minute and absolutely stop and, like Mary, take all of this into our hearts. What does this mean for us? In Unity, we teach that every character in the Bible, every place, every event represents an aspect of our own consciousness. That means from every story, we can learn how to reconnect with our own spiritual essence. So the questions are, what can we learn from Gabriel? What can we learn from Mary? What can we learn from the newborn babe? Well, Gabriel is an angel. And metaphysically, angels represent messengers. And the Metaphysical Bible Dictionary says, our angels are spiritual perceptive qualities which ever dwell in the presence of God within us. Now, remember, by the time Gabriel departs, Mary is receptive to outcomes that seem not only challenging, but downright impossible. And the beauty of her encounter with Gabriel is that Mary shows us how to hold the same consciousness, to say yes to the personal experience of the divine. Remember her first reaction to the divine messenger? We read in the New Revised Standard Version that she says, but she was most perplexed and wondered what sort of a greeting this might be. In the New International Version, it says, Mary was greatly troubled by his words. And in the modern translation of the Bible called The Message, it says, she was thoroughly shaken, wondering what was behind a greeting like that. Well, I think we can all identify with that and understand why that would have been Mary's reaction. Sometimes today, 2,000 years later, when we first receive spiritual inspiration, we're confused, disoriented, and unsure. But the angel Gabriel, as a divine messenger, discerns the source of Mary's reaction. He nails it and he names it. He says to her, Mary, do not be what? Do not be afraid. Mary, do not be afraid, because you have found favor with God. Gabriel acknowledges Mary's fear, but reminds her that she is one with the Lord, and that perfect love casts out fear. Mary shows us, I think, in the words of Martin Luther King, one of my favorite quotes about faith, faith is taking the first step even when we don't see the whole staircase. And I bet we can all think of times in our life that that was true. And when Gabriel tells Mary that she will conceive a son to be named Jesus, what is her immediate reaction? Does she say, oh, yay? No, she says, how can this be? The possibility does not compute with the physical laws that are in Mary's mind. And how many of us have been haunted by the how? How is this possible? How can I possibly do this? How will this ever work out? How will people react? How questions are always from our human ego. They're not from our spiritual selves. Mary shows us how to step out in faith and leave the how up to divine guidance to reveal, as the Daily Word said, the next steps. She affirms, here am I, the servant of the Lord, let it be with me according to your words. And some of you who are with us during the Sermon on the Mount series may remember we heard Jesus say, let your yes be yes, and let what? Your no be no. And here Mary is saying no to fear and worry, and she is saying yes to spiritual revelation. And when we say yes to spiritual insights, we too receive an annunciation, an awakening of our spiritual purpose. Now, metaphysically, Mary represents the soul that magnifies the Lord and is receptive to the spiritual potential of the I Am, all the possibilities of the Christ just seeking to express through us. Bible scholar Reverend Ed Townley writes, Mary is our own feminine energy of faith, love, and acceptance. It is that part of consciousness that first receives the seed of awareness of our oneness with God. And then that seed grows until we are ready to give birth to a new expression of our divine nature. Now that process can be challenging, as it was for Mary. I'm sure it was no picnic to be 9 months pregnant and ride on a donkey across the desert. The infant awareness sometimes needs time to grow, to be nurtured through distractions and shadows until its full Christ energy can express. And if we're honest, Christmas can be a tender time for those who might be grieving or struggling in some way. And we need to use this Christmas season, this Advent season, to affirm that no matter what might be happening in our outer lives, our souls are pivotal. We can magnify the challenge, or we can magnify the Lord, turning to the power and presence within and discovering that we have all the powers of the Christ, and we will and shall prevail. Reverend Ed Townley says, Mary's story tells us that there's no human process that enables us to receive that creative inspiration of divine love. We don't get that from our human minds. It is by living our human lives as spiritual beings, making our life choices according to spiritual law, as Mary did, that we become fertile ground for the seed of Christ's consciousness to grow. And so Mary's journey, from the moment she affirms, "Let it be with me," to the time she lovingly wraps the newborn babe in swaddling clothes, is a model for all of us, a model of trust, love, and the unshakable faith that through divine power, all things are possible, all things. The age-old story, Christmas story, is as new as this now moment. It's about the birth of Jesus, and it's about a rebirth of awareness of our indwelling Christ. The Advent season brings an invitation to each one of us to take our own journey to Bethlehem. And our journey is really a sacred journey within, a journey of faith, of rebirth of the Christ of our being, a journey of ever unfolding awareness of our divine nature. And I'm going to stop here and say that I ordered Advent booklets, and they're out on the table, and they're beautiful meditations for each day. So you can, this whole week, have a meditation on faith, and you're welcome to take one. They're out on the table to continue our thoughts from today. So in the end, the beautiful Christmas story is a metaphysical representation of our oneness with God. So as we deck the halls and wrap the gifts, let us also open our hearts to allow the awareness of Christ to be born anew. During this sacred Advent season, let us renew our commitment to serve from the Christ of our being as God's expression on this earth, sharing our divine gifts of the four themes of Advent, our divine gifts of faith, peace, love, and joy to bring light to the world. And so it is. So let's take a moment now with hearts full of our Christmas message to prepare ourselves for prayer and meditation. And we'll do so by taking the great truth about the nature of God into our hearts. And for those of you who are here for the first time, this is printed in your bulletin. It is, there is only one power and one presence in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is. Together, there is only one power and one presence in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is.